You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Kyle Yelmseth.
It really takes the power out of the hands of who used to tell us what we should like and not like, who say, this is the right way to think about something, this is the right product, this is the cool hip thing. And you've, you know, divested that power out to the public, to those who are bold enough to get online and, again, share their stories.
Kyle is the founder and CEO of top-tier talent management agency G&B, which houses both the College of Influence and the Normalize Equality Initiative. A self-made minority business owner, Yelmseth brings the full extent of his experience living as a half-black, half-white male to his work building media momentum around messages of diversity and inclusivity with his trademark solutions-driven attitude. Under his leadership, G&B has successfully reinvented the talent management world with integrity while creating a refreshingly diverse company culture, serving more than 60 exclusive clients with a powerful, inclusive ethos that transforms influencers into influential people. Kyle, welcome to On Brand.
Well, thank you for having me, Nick. I'm excited to be here. I love talking about branding. Related.
Oh, yeah. Well, I am excited. And as you shared in our pre-show, I'm, of course, here in Iowa, and I love talking to anyone else with another I-State Midwestern connection with your Indiana background. So we'll no doubt confuse listeners from other non-I-States who so often confuse Iowa, Indiana, Idaho, all of the above. But, you know, right. Just... as you said earlier, it's all corn and soybeans. But
right.
Well, welcome. Well, I am excited to chat a little bit. You know, your bio summed up some of this, but I'm fascinated by your work and not only your work with G&B, but the other initiatives that are housed there as well. I have to ask the follow-up question because we love great brand names here on the show.
Sure.
College of Influence. Tell us, for those that may not know, what the College of Influence is and is all about.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up, Nick, because it is just like one of those things. You know, you could probably hear my smile. I'm proud of the College of Influence, but, you know, as you said, like great brand names. I just feel really lucky. Like I've always had this really strong connection to education. I'm from a small town and I went far. So I'm from a small town in Washington State, but I went far away, as we were talking about, to Indiana, to Purdue in Indiana for college. And so I've always just felt like you've got to have that message of how important education is, but like how it, like, you should go far. Like, if you can go far, you know, and just check out things. And maybe that means traveling around a bit or, you know, of course, uprooting and moving. But education's always been super important to me in every role that I've had post-college. So when I started this talent management group, I learned a lot in the first few years, and I'm not the type to really just hold all the info for myself. And especially in this world of influencer marketing and the creator economy that's growing, I think it's like there's a data point around 90% of talent that are out there today don't have representation. And so I created the College of Influence as a place where I could dump my brain on the internet, let people who want to, you know, explore what it means to be a creator, to be an influencer, to potentially partner with brands, you know, and build their own businesses, just see things that I see are important to, you know, managing a growing business that's linked to social profiles. And I just happened to think of College of Influence one day in the summer of 2019, and it was $11.99 on GoDaddy. And that blew my mind that the, you know, such a incredible phrase, College of Influence, was $11.99. So I scooped it up, and then here we are.
Well, there's probably a lot of smiles out there for anyone that's ever named anything and has gone through all of that navel gazing, has come upon something and has that moment of truth, that visit to GoDaddy, like you just said. And when you find that for $11.99, wow, I'd punch out for the day. You've accomplished all your major objectives.
You know, it's just one of those things. Like, even after I got it, I had that feeling. You know, the feeling, like you said, it's just like there's something about it. The great brand name. I went ahead and trademarked it, and was able to trademark it very quickly. Get it through the system and got the certificate. And I was like, wow. I don't know if this means anything. I don't know if it's worth anything, but it's mine.
So I also, speaking on the topic of influence, there's another sentence that closes your bio, and I think that you alluded to this a bit when we talk about influence and influencer marketing. It's on the verge of getting a little buzzwordy out there when it comes to influencers. Yep. And I love your sentence, and I'd like you to build on this and tell us more what it means. When you talk about transforming influencers into influential people, because I think that we're at this point where we're nodding along, yep, influencers, but we don't really know what that means, how it works, and how to really make sense of it. And that sentence seems like it might be a path there.
Yeah, that's a really great question, Nick. I think, you know, kind of where I come from, to just back it up a little bit, because you're very right, the word influencer is too buzzwordy today. And actually what I've seen because of that fact is that influencers themselves are kind of going into another direction, and brands are too. Even the platforms, you know, are really trying to get sticky about calling influencers not influencers, but creators. And that was my original email address when I started my company, was creators@GNB, because influencer hadn't been really invented yet, but I was working with people that have translatable skills. My first talent was, you know, like a very seasoned photographer who went and got a degree at Berkeley for economics. My second talent that I ever managed was somebody who got their degree from Cornell, also a seasoned photographer, great writers. So when I was like really getting into the industry at the beginning, I was dealing with people that had, again, these translatable skills beyond just like snapping a quick photo and posting it up on their Instagram account, right? They brought a lot more to their work. And that is something that's really inherent to our company. And, you know, this isn't a knock on any other agency out there who may have people that just, you know, do the quick snapshots or whatever, or they've only been around in the industry for a little bit. Maybe they don't have those same kind of chops that our talent do. Totally fine, because that's what's great about influencers, is that everybody can get into this industry by telling their own personal stories. It's just like how my view of this space started, and how it started in a bit of a different lens. So I think the way I wanted to approach building an agency that represents people, that goes to speak to that last line, is, you know, I've got influencers, people who are going out there and they're sharing their work, they're sharing their stories. And because they're doing that, they're amassing, you know, groups of followers that we call, you know, a community. Now we need to make them into influential people. And the way you do that is you focus on building with them a business that lasts over time. And, you know, there's lots of seasons to everybody's business, ups and downs, new things, new ideas, new ways they want to go, new directions for the stories they want to tell. So it's really tracking with each individual on how we can build that presence over time, instead of just having somebody, you know, grow 100,000 followers hate what they're doing, you know, or not really find a real love for the content they're creating, be a flash in the pan. So I think that's what that really boils down to, that phrase.
Well, and I like the temporal layer that you added to that as well, because I think when we talk about influencers, it feels like you said, it's getting to this follower count level, as opposed to really building this presence, this asset, over time and ultimately being influential beyond, the follower count on a particular social network.
Right. Amen. And, you know, again, this represents what I think is incredible about influencers, as I mentioned, and to like expand on it a little bit, is it really takes the power out of the hands of who used to tell us what we should like and not like. You know, that could be celebrities that we're talking about, or it could be people that went to some of these giant, you know, universities with the Harvard degrees and whatnot, who say, this is the right way to think about something. This is the right product. This is the cool, hip thing. And you've, you know, divested that power out to the public, to those who are bold enough to get online and again, share their stories and talk about what they're doing, talk about what they're using, if it's products, talk about the knowledge that they've gained, you know, because there's so many incredibly interesting and exciting accounts on social media where it's people showing what they've learned over time, learned from their families, their trades. I follow a bunch of the reason I'm thinking about this, because I follow a bunch of woodworkers and whatnot. And it's not that they necessarily went to school for woodworking. They just happened to pick it up from their parents or whatever. And they do the coolest things on TikTok or Instagram. And it's all about, again, that power coming back into the individual's hands and then sharing that with the community in kind of a genuine way. And that community could be 2,000 people, could be 500 people, could be 100,000 people. But the authenticity is the important, you know, factor there.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the 7 dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics, at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard with 2 A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So let's talk a little bit about that community outreach work, and specifically shifting gears to your other big initiative, Normalize Equality. And I feel like, you know, if previously we've been talking about, I feel like both of your initiatives kind of have this, almost this fork in the road of, you know, influencers versus that new definition we were talking about of influential people and building that asset. And maybe I'm quick to draw parallels in your work, but with Normalize Equality, I feel like you've got something around diversity, inclusivity that increasingly media, businesses, brands are looking to, at the risk of being glib, they're looking to check a box quickly. And I don't think that's a quick box to check. I think that's a heavy lift. And I think that too requires some different thinking.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's interesting the way that you kind of posited there. You know, you're right. In some respects, over the last year, what we saw in the wake of George Floyd's murder was a lot of quick box checking, because brands, you know, in their digital presence, it was just like a melee of getting called out for their lack of diversity, inclusion, you know, equity. You know, it was just like this incredible time of exposure or being exposed. And one of those words, you know, that really has had a field day or become very mainstream, the equity word, was really interesting. It was interesting to hear the story, see the receipts from people who were saying, hey, I'm getting contacted by this brand to do work with them, and they're paying me like extremely less than my white counterparts. And here are the receipts, and here's where we can actually see that play out. And there were just so many points about what came out of last summer, you know, the summer of social justice movement here in America, that were interesting, and I think things that people, you know, really hadn't considered before. And they were really pushed along by the presence of social media that we haven't had in previous, you know, social justice moments, that made it just more impactful, and not only impactful, but like have helped things keep momentum, where in past moments, it's like, you know, maybe we made a donation, we all paid attention, you know, when Black Lives Matter first kind of sprung up after Ferguson, you know, we paid attention for a moment, there was some box checking, and then you could kind of, you know, file that away. With social media, and this kind of goes into why I started Normalize Equality, with social media, there isn't the opportunity to really escape from the conversation, because those that are compelled will keep the drum beating and keep talking about how we need to change and keep asking for receipts of the things that these brands are doing and who they're hiring and how inclusive we're becoming or diverse and whatnot. So that I mean, like, I didn't even really get into like where Normalized Equality came from, but it's, you know, it's really interesting. It's been incredible for me to see. And I do feel like there has been some box checking. That's always going to be there. But I will say, in a positive note, I have seen so many brands really, you know, take up these measures and keep them going and be more inclusive about the campaigns that they've been planning specific to my space of influencer marketing, because I've been around long enough to know, you know, like, or to remember when we used to go to influencer events, you know, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, and it would be a table of white faces and a token black face or a token, you know, minority face at the end of the table. And that was just a truth and typically how they go. And so, you know, again, to be on the more positive side of the conversation or positive note, I have seen a massive change in how brands and agencies who plan these things really make the effort to make sure that there is a diversity of voices, faces, you know, abilities. It's not just about racial diversity, but diversity, you know, across the spectrum of who is getting invited to these things, whether it is a in-person event or a, you know, campaign that's going to be, you know, where they're going to be representing a brand. And I think that's a very positive, you know, move forward in the right direction.
You know, I don't want to put you on the spot, and I don't, more importantly, want to cannibalize your smile-worthy brand later, but you mentioned that, you know, feeling good about seeing some good actors on the brand side out there, and I think that, especially, I mean, what, certainly not the biggest challenge, but I think that we, in the social age, even independent of this, we were quick to pounce on those getting it wrong. And I do think it's important to highlight those examples, especially when it involves injustice. But I also think it's important to lift up some of those positive examples. Do you have, is there a brand that you think of yes, that's a step in the right direction?
You know, that is an interesting question. I really should have prepped more for. And I'm trying to think, you know, just in general, because one of the things that's interesting about that question in particular for my firm. My firm is, you know, very diverse. Just in retrospect of what happened last summer, we sat down and we looked at who we are, GNB, and who we represent. And because, as you mentioned in my bio, I'm, you know, a minority individual, a minority business owner. One thing that really became clear after the summer of social justice is, like, we've been diverse since day one. It's not something where we had to go back and, like, reverse engineer diversity within our talent roster and diversity within our staff and whatnot. And that's diversity all across the spectrum, you know, like within people of color and lots of different individuals from various backgrounds. And it's just, you know, it is a melting pot within our roster and within our firm. And the reason I bring that up is because I got asked a similar question, especially last summer, you know, who are the good actors and who are the bad actors? And it was hard for me to pinpoint some of the good actors as much as, of course, you know, like you were saying, it's like we're quick to pounce on the bad ones. But that's only because I feel that within my firm's walls, we've always done a good job of, like, making sure that the representation of our talent is really widely diverse out there on these programs. Like, our talent of color do not make less than our creators who are white. You know, it's, and just generally speaking, that is something, like, we hold to. And I think that we've been able to hold to without having to think about it and really make the effort to be like, all right, are these people getting that much? We see the money, we see the dollars every day. But, you know, there's a great diversity of brands out there that work with all of our talent, you know. And I just pulled up a list while I was, of course, laying this groundwork here so that I could speak more intelligently, give you some quote unquote good actors. And I really do. I can say this, you know, confidently. One of the biggest companies who I would say is, you know, been very interested in our diverse talent and diverse storytelling, and there's a lot of reasons behind this, is Netflix. And Netflix is interesting because they have a diversity of content that they need to put in front of people. And so, you know, in terms of companies getting it, quote unquote, right, they are somebody we've worked with time and time again, not just to tell, you know, talk about the biggest top 10 shows that they've got, but to talk about all sorts of shows and all sorts of, and they are, there has been, you know, this swath of diverse content that they're putting out there, not just racial diversity, but actually diverse, you know, shows from all over the globe that are now accessible to the American audience through that platform. So I think Netflix is probably one of the biggest companies that I would say I feel like we've worked with a ton all across the spectrum of our talent roster. And I was trying to think of, like, a smaller example, and I would probably have to get back to you on a smaller example. There's lots of small brands that we work with our diverse roster, from, like, Jenny Kane is a smaller, more niche brand that's, you know, definitely grown a lot over the last few years. But they're one that often works with our various creators of color. So love working with Jenny Kane, Chanel even. You know, I've actually, Chanel is, like, obviously a luxury heritage brand. I just see them doing it right because I see who they're working with, not only within our roster, but then kind of on the outside, you know, when it comes to different various influencers, and they, you know, are working with a diverse group of individuals out there. So
great.
Probably top of mind. Probably went way too deep into that.
No, well, Netflix is, I do think, a great example when you talk about, and especially that gets back to your earlier point, and that's not to say that there aren't smaller, singular moves that can be made, but when you talk about keeping momentum, that ongoing commitment to stories, I think it has some real long-term impact there. So I'm going to shift gears and make it easier for you with my other gotcha question that has a warning with it. And that is a brand, Kyle, that has made you smile recently.
A brand that's made me smile recently. You know, that is a good gotcha question. And it's funny because I think you would think that as somebody in this space, I pay a lot of attention to brands, but maybe I think it's because I pay so much attention to brands during the day that in my own personal life, I don't pay as much attention. But if you'll allow me to actually give you a brand, I don't know if you really wanted it to be like a big brand or it could just be any brand that I'm aware
of. Any brand.
I do have one. So there is a brand that makes me smile all the time, and I think that the spotlight should definitely be put on this brand. And it's called Fly by Jing. And Fly by Jing is a spice company, we should say. But it's kind of like a spice lifestyle company, and that's why it makes me smile. Really, it was found by this woman named Jing, and she does these incredible spices that are really from her heritage and like her growing up in the Sichuan province of China. And so when she came out with the sauces to put on things, my wife is Chinese, and so we happen to get some of the spices. They go incredible on everything. We put them on pizza, popcorn, you name it, because we love a good spice. But the brand makes me smile because they have this cool retro, you know, kind of like retro poppy branding element to their brand story and their, you know, their visual guidelines. It's so fun. And they make things, and I call them like a spice lifestyle brand because they make things like these sweatpants and like a sweatsuit that is just like ridiculous and wild. And I wear it on the weekends. I bought one of their sweatsuits. They have a few different like clothing items. But it's just the design on the sweatpants is a bit outrageous and fun. And everybody always asks me about them. And then I'm like, you got to try the spice out because it's incredible. So it's just great branding, great, you know, great storytelling from the founder and, you know, a great product that, you know, we really love to use all the time. So I would say Fly by Jing is the answer to my question.
I love learning about new brands. And I think it's a testament, any brand that you're going to put on sweatpants and wear around. I have nothing but anecdotal evidence to back this up. No science yet, but I think is a brand that obviously forges a strong connection. Kyle, where can listeners go to learn more about who you are and all the cool things you're working on?
So gb-dm.com, you know, that's we are, the long name of our firm is GNB Digital Management. So just gb-dm.com, excuse me. And we talk about everything there from normalized equality to the College of Influence and all of our roster and who we are and why we're here. And I love it when people drop me a line through the contact form on our webpage. So
awesome. So we will link up to that in our show notes here at onbrandpodcast.com. Kyle, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you, Nick.
And if you like what you're hearing, if Kyle and I have made you smile, remember, you can always listen for free via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.